Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
The following is a paid program.
All right. Good Saturday afternoon, everybody. I am Rich Orris, senior home consultant with Mosby Building Arts and your host of Right at Home with Rich every Saturday right here on the greatest station in St. Louis, News Talk 97.1 FM. So thanks for tuning in today. And I am really excited today because for the next hour, you can call in with your design questions. Yes, on this very special show, we've got not one, but two design experts with me today and a very special event upcoming this week that we're going to be kind of talking about that you won't want to miss. But for today, call in with your design questions, the number you need, 314-241-9797. And keep in mind, when you call in, you're eligible for that $25 Stefanina's gift card giveaway. I fell in love with Stefanina's over 18 years ago. And I mean to tell you, if you haven't tried their baked cavatelli, call in today, win this gift card, and bam, free baked cavatelli for you. I'm telling you, you will absolutely love it. Make sure you leave us your phone number so we can contact you if you're the big winner. Again, write it down, 314-241-9797. And as always, halfway through the show, I'll unveil another Right at Home hack. I've got a what I think will be a nice design hack here today that hopefully can include my guests a little bit with me, so you don't want to miss this one. So for today, my guests, they're both members of the American Society of Interior Design. They're hosting an event, a unique industry event on Wednesday, August 14th. You're going to want to stick around because I'm going to let them explain what it all is and the correlation between your health and your wellness in the spaces that you live and work. But feel free to give us a call and ask us any design questions about that. One more time, 314-241-9797. So I can't delay this any longer. I'm so super excited. Joining me today, I have Michelle Banks and Kimberly Ruther. How are you both doing today?
Fantastic.
Great.
Awesome. Awesome. So I really appreciate you guys coming out on a Saturday and, you know, taking some of your time up and going through all of this. But I feel like we've got such a great topic here with what they do at this event and everything, not just what you guys do as a whole, but what this event is about and everything. So we can get into that in a little bit, but what I'd kind of like to do is just go over just a little personal stuff with the both of you. So we flipped a quarter before the show, and Michelle won the toss and opted to receive. So I'm going to start with you, Michelle, that just give me a little background. I hear you own your own business, and mm-hmm. you kind of came from Chicago and some stuff. So
right.
Can you just kind of go over your background? What got you into the industry, and kind of what are you doing in there today?
Well, I actually went to college and got a marketing degree because my parents, who are listening, wouldn't allow me to go to college for an interior design degree. But I ended up moving to Denver and then Milwaukee, and I decided I had to do this. So just a few years later, I went back and got my design degree. And I immediately joined ASID in Wisconsin, actually, and I've been involved with them for 26 years in one capacity or another. I've chaired showcase houses, I've been on boards, I've been all over the place. But yeah, 20 years ago, I moved to Chicago, and I had a daughter, and I got divorced, so I decided to open my own business, Michelle Banks Interiors, and I've worked up there, for, like I said, for 20 years and just moved down here 2 years ago. So I'm kind of a newbie down here in St. Louis.
Oh, awesome. Well, hey, this St. Louis is a great area. Don't believe some of the stuff that you read. It is really small, quaint. Everyone kind of knows everybody. It's really a nice place to be, I think. I don't know. It's hard for me. I've been here for my whole life. So yeah. Haven't really been other than visiting too many other places. But it really is, you know, a really nice, small, little quaint area and everything. So, Kimberly, is Kim okay? Or what do you like to be called?
I do like to be called Kimberly.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So I'm going to go with Kimberly then. I have a client. Her name's Kimberly, and she is she likes to be called Kimberly too. That's kind of funny, but she's one of my favorite clients. We've done so much work for her and everything. So, so what do you specialize in and everything? And where did you come from? And how did you get into all this?
So I actually started drawing quote unquote floor plans of my bedroom when I was 8 years old and rearranging my furniture. My dad is a carpenter by trade, and I've always been around the home building industry. And I just kind of knew at a young age, this is kind of what I wanted to do. And shadowed somebody when I was in junior in high school, actually. So I got my degree in interior design, bachelor in interior design, and worked for a couple of local firms doing residential and commercial work. And then I moved to California. I lived in San Diego for a few years and did model homes. And that was pretty fun and exciting. But I moved back here about 15 years ago and started my own business and do mainly residential, some small commercial work.
Awesome. That's sounds kind of like kind of my background growing up, getting into working with my father and stuff like that. But I will tell a quick little story, on kind of like what you guys do. So when my son was in high school, he had like a high school level kind of architectural class, and he had to lay out a house, and, you know, it had rules that it had to be 3 bedrooms and had to have this and a door off the back kitchen, and the kitchen had to be so big. And So I sat down with him and I thought, well, this is going to be easy because I could build this place, much less draw it on a piece of paper, right? And it was not that easy to fit it in the lot and the footprint. And, you know, the kitchen ended up being too small. And you're like, but the kitchen has to be this big. What am I taking away from? How am I doing this? And it turned out to be extensively harder than I would have ever imagined when we first sat down, because I thought, this is what I do for a living. You know, I could hang the drywall in it. I could tape and mud it. Why can't I draw this thing out? And so you guys got your work cut out for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in fact, we have a 2-day-long exam that we have to take to become professional ASID members called the NCIDQ. And one of the things that we have to do, we don't know what we're going to get. Is it a restaurant? Is it a building? Is it a residential?
Oh, wow.
And sometimes they even combine it. So we have to know all of the building code and everything else involved with all of that. And you have to space plan it within, I don't know, what do we have, like an hour or two, something like that. But yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So I would probably fail that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That quick.
Most people
yeah.
do. Most people do.
Yeah. It sounds pretty hard. But no, so that's, it's amazing what goes into all that. Even if the room's there, fitting furniture and different stuff, I can imagine it's got to not be that easy.
It's like putting a puzzle together.
Yeah, yeah. So I think what we're going to do is we'll get into our first break here. If you have any interior design questions, any remodeling questions for me, anything going on, give us a call, 314-241-9797. Today is your day for that interior design. Do not miss out and get in on that gift card. And we'll get into that association and everything when we return and find out what that's about. All right, we are back, and this hour is going to go fast. So if you have any design questions for both my guests, we got double the pleasure here today. This is like double mint gum or whatever. You will get your answers to today on your design. I guarantee you. Give us a shout, 314-241-9797. If you're far away or over in Illinois, 866-455-9797. And so before we get into that association and everything, and we can talk a little bit about our sponsorship and the things happening in that event, I'm going to jump here. We've got our first call on the line. Peggy is on the line, and you have a question about a loft area, Peggy?
Right. I have a small fishing cabin, 14 by 16, on my lake, and it is awesome, but I need a way to get to the loft without having it look like a clumsy ladder. And I was thinking, I don't know, a tree trunk, just something. I live in the country, so something kind of primitive.
Okay. You guys done any primitive work out in the country lately? Got any ideas on
that one's difficult.
A ladder for a loft? Yeah.
Well, I going straight up, there are only so many ways you can do it. If you can go a little bit more horizontal, one of the things you can do is actually use half split logs going up and make it into a staircase. But it sounds like you might not have that kind of room.
You might be able to do like, think of a tree house, how you like nail the boards onto a tree trunk. So if you did have like a decent sized tree trunk, you could get in there and kind of put the ladder on the trunk and make it look like you're kind of climbing through a tree house. That might be kind of neat.
Yeah, even if I had, they don't have to be total steps. I mean, they can just be, you know, like little enough to put your foot on, because it's not a traumatic climb. I have a pitched roof, but I have a library ladder. They take up too much room. And I thought, could I put something on a wall by itself?
I'd probably still angle it a little bit just to, you know, if you could angle it out off that wall a little bit, just to not be actually straight up and down, it's going to make it a lot easier to get up there.
Well, it looked better.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, I would think about the, if there's somebody out that way that could come up with an idea with that tree trunk. I'm sure it sounds like you got a lot of trees around you that probably come down all the time. And if they could, you know, trees grow kind of crooked all the time anyway, so it might have a little slope to it anyways, and put that from the floor to the, you know, floor of the loft, and then attach something on there to kind of give it maybe some thick branches or, you know, something like that. Give it that real outdoorsy look, like I'm climbing up to my treehouse. We need those treehouse builder guys. Have you seen them on the DIY show where they build those crazy tree houses and everything?
Exactly.
Someone like that would come up with something. They'd probably do it all the time.
Well, how safe is it to put a dead tree inside? I mean, do you have to worry about bugs or anything?
Oh, I would think not
they would
too
be
much.
You could get it treated before you put it in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, get it treated, kind of coated and soaked in and all that. And yeah, you wouldn't have to worry too much about that if it's done correctly. I would probably actually recommend, Peggy, if you look for, even on maybe YouTube or just search the guidance stuff, for that show where these guys actually build like really cool, crazy tree houses, you will probably see something on one of those episodes that would show you something that would be really neat. Or go to Howe's and kind of, I don't know what you'd search though. What do you think you'd search to try and find something like that? Like loft ladders or?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, I think there's a lot of the small space living, all the people that are building into like these 300 square foot trailers, and they've
tiny
got
homes.
Tiny homes. Yeah. They have some really creative. I've seen like bookcases and things that are stairs that don't really look like stairs.
Yes. I knew you all would do this to me. I don't have a computer.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
But I get Log Cabin magazines, and I haven't seen anything, you know.
Interesting,
it just
yeah.
It doesn't take up a lot of room because it's small, but it's awesome. It overlooks the lake. I've got a eagle's nest up in a tree across the lake, and
okay, yeah.
I'll try the tree. I like an irregular shape rather than
And if you have time one day, go to like a local library, jump online and,
right,
you know, search, yeah, Google do. Search like tiny home stairs and stuff like that. You'll probably find all kinds of stuff. So, mm-hmm. All right, Peggy, hopefully that was helpful for you.
I'll give it a try. Thanks
all right.
a lot.
No okay. problem. You're very welcome. Thanks for calling. And I'm just going to get right into Tim here. Tim, you have a bathroom question for us?
Hi, Rich. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I've got a master bath that I want to remodel. It's in a ranch home. There's some plumbing that I want to move around in the bathroom. The basement below the bathroom is finished, so it's, you know, it's drywall. It's got a drywall ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, if I can avoid it, I don't want to go through that ceiling down below. If I can, I'd like to move that plumbing.
Okay.
Get access that plumbing through the bathroom itself. Maybe pull up, I don't know, maybe pull up the subfloor. You know, I don't know. You guys have any thoughts on that?
You can't get to it through the subfloor. But a lot of times it's just easier through the drywall below and then patch and, you know, paint below. But I do realize sometimes we get into that where, you know, it's one big giant ceiling, and to do a 4-foot patch, you got to paint a 45-foot ceiling. It's, you could go either way. The only thing I would probably recommend is, occasionally, when we do go through the subfloor, we run into stuff there where we end up needing to go through the drywall anyways to get low enough on that stack to connect and stuff like that. So sometimes we give the effort to not hurt the drywall ceiling and then end up in the middle of the project just needing to and doing it anyway. And then you're kind of going at it twice where you're like, oh, wow, I should have just done the drywall, you know, in the first place.
The stack, I don't know if it had to move. I'm more talking about supply lines.
Oh, okay. Supply lines you should have pretty good luck with from the subfloor side. If you're not moving, you know, a lot of the drains around real far and stuff like that, you can take the subfloor up and go through there.
Okay. I guess I just cut the subfloor where I need to. I mean, I don't have to pull up a whole sheet. I just cut it where I need to.
Yeah, you can cut it out where you need to. And a lot of times what we do is, because you're kind of, you break the floor joist in the center with that, you know, plywood in order to nail the both sides of the seam and everything. So for the most part, what we do is, you just cut alongside of that floor joist where your old plywood, existing plywood on the floor will still cover that entire floor joist. And then you just put a nailer, what we would call like a nailer, onto the side of that floor joist. Nail it, glue it, screw it, bolt it real good, real tight. It doesn't necessarily have to be as big as that floor joist. It could be like a 2x6 and run that across there, attach it real well.
Okay,
and then that'll give you a full inch and a half to attach your new plywood to, because it's real hard to cut that plywood, you know, straight down the center of that floor joist. And there's usually nails and screws in there that you got to try and get out of the way. So we just go over 3/4 of an inch, go along the side, and then, you know, attach something to the side to help you get your new plywood on there. So, sound good?
Good trick. Yeah, okay, thanks.
All right, hey, no problem. Great question. I appreciate the call, Tim. And we do got some calls rolling in here, but we have a mandatory break here that happens at 12:30. So we'll get to that and take some calls and get into my hack when we return. All right, we are back, and I think I'm going to hang on to my hack for a minute, and I'm going to get to Robert so that we don't have him waiting on the line too long here. Let's see if we can get through you. Robert, you have a question for us?
Yes, I do, Rich. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, my question is, I'm remodeling 2 bathrooms, and I have a contractor doing it, and but I'm picking out a bunch of the stuff that he's recommending. What's the best thing to go with as far as the fixtures in the bathroom for, like, doorknobs and for faucets and for shower stuff? I mean, is it brushed nickel? Is it oil rub bronze? I mean, what's the best thing to go with that's longest lasting and not trendy?
That's a great question, one we get all the time. What do you guys, you got some, obviously you'll have some input on this one.
Well, the classic actually is chrome. That'll just never go out of style. You can't go wrong with it. Oil rub bronze is kind of going out now. It's kind of had its heyday. The brushed nickel seems to be hanging on for a little while longer, at least.
Yeah.
I would probably stick with either one of those, chrome or the brushed nickel.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you said the brushed nickel or the chrome?
Correct.
Perfect. Great. They recommended the brushed nickel. I had another one recommend the classic chrome. So you think they're both okay?
They're both okay.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Hey, thanks for your call, Robert. That was a very good question, and something that we definitely talk about and worry about, you know, quite often is, and people are concerned that I don't want to pick something, you know, completely trendy and, you know, that I'm going to wish I didn't have it, you know, in 10 years or something like that. They want something that's going to work and last and, you know, not have to change too soon. And building for quality, building to last, and yeah, you want your design options to last with you. So speaking of design options, I'm going to get into my right at home hack here, because so for today with the interior design and all this thought in mind, I came up with some around the home design ideas that are kind of clever things that you can do. And, you know, everyone is always looking for different. They're looking for clever, unique, you know, design ideas that not everybody has. And then, of course, they're always looking for it not to cost a fortune if it can't. So here's a few ideas that I came up with for, you know, taking care of some of these issues around the house. So one that I saw that I thought I've seen us do and I thought was really, really cool was using old doorknobs for hanging towels. So you can, you know, take the old, like the glass doorknobs or the brass with kind of the plate that has the skeleton key looking lock thing on it. And you can line like three or four of them on a wall and hang a towel over it. Or you could put one kind of as your towel ring near the sink at the wall to hang a hand towel on. And I thought that was a really out of the box, cool idea. Another one was a dry erase board for your kitchen. So instead of just, you know, your standard kind of ugly white dry erase board with the little thing on the bottom, they took a frame, just a really neat picture frame, and they put a piece of fabric behind the glass, and then you get a contrasting marker, like a light fabric and a dark, you know, dry erase marker, and you can write your grocery list items and things like that right on the glass. Wipe it off, start again. So that was a really neat way to kind of have that board for everybody where it just doesn't look like this whiteboard in your kitchen space. And one of my personal favorites that we do all the time, I actually just saw this on a project yesterday in a basement. We hung a board with a frame and everything over some controls for some landscaping lights and stuff. But taking a painting and hinging it, install a couple of hinges on the side of the painting, attach it to the wall, and then you could cover up all those unsightly things in your house, like the alarm key box, maybe you have an old intercom system that you don't really use anymore that you don't want to go through all the steps of drywall and all the things. Just kind of put it right over that, and you can hinge and get to it and everything. You could do that with a safe if you're putting a safe in the wall. They also showed a thermostat, but to me, I was kind of like, you know, I don't know. I'd want to block the thermostat for the temperature and stuff like that to really make it work. It might change how your HVACs work for the home, but there's a lot of things like that you can kind of cover up and hide in your house in a neat way so that you don't have to look at all those unsightly boxes and things like that. So do you guys have any thoughts or ideas, or if you had any neat things like that you've done to kind of help, you know, people out in the past?
Well, I don't know why this came into my brain, but doing little boys' rooms and using a skateboard without the wheels on it for the side table for the bed is one of my ideas. And then that leads me to the next one, which is you can cantilever sort of a box off of the wall as your end table if you don't have a lot of floor space. So you can kind of make your own.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. So some good ideas just around the house stuff. And I invite everybody, tune in every week. If you're looking for information on these hacks, I do one every Saturday. You can find them on my Facebook page, Twitter, LinkedIn. Just look Rich Orris Mosby or at Rich Orris for Twitter, and you can find all this stuff. You can go into 97.1's website and get to all the podcasts of all the past shows and hear them that way. But tune in every week. I will have a different hack for you. Hopefully they are helpful for everybody. I really enjoyed today's getting you guys involved. That was really cool. But let's get a little bit into why we're here, because we haven't gotten a touch on too much yet. And we're sponsors at Mosby of the American Society of Interior Designers. And Michelle, I think you're like the president-elect?
President-elect.
Okay. Awesome. So can you guys just kind of touch on what is that all about? What do they do? And you know, what's it all about for everybody?
Well, ASID is a professional organization, much like the American Medical Association is for doctors, but this one's for interior designers, and it was founded in 1975. And our members practice everything from residential, commercial, healthcare, education, hospitality, you name it, we do it. The national organization has advanced the profession of interior design at an international level, so we partner with international associations as well. And our local chapter just has a bunch of very talented members.
Awesome. So what would the importance be, or how would you help out homeowners? You know, what's the importance of a homeowner looking for someone in a, you know, organization like the ASID?
So ASID's mantra is design impacts lives. That's really what we're trained to do, is enhancing our clients' quality of life. We do more than just aesthetic enhancements. We're seeking to make their space, whether it's commercial or residential, tailored to their specific needs and make it more functional and a better place for them. So that's kind of one aspect.
So it sounds like a lot of education, a lot of smart people, and, you know, making sure you're getting to the right smart people that have the right qualifications, right, and everything.
Resources, yeah.
Yeah, and resources to help you out. So this event that's on Wednesday, I love the well-building stuff. There's a lot we could get into that, but let's start just with the event. What's it about? What do people get out of it? Can anybody, you know, attend this thing? And, you know, tell us a little bit about this event this Wednesday.
Well, the event is actually, and it's kind of an industry event. We are required to do continuing education units every year. So this is a CEU, and actually it's going to be a overview of the well-building standard, and then actually the version 2 pilot, which is coming out right now. So the well-building standard was developed about 5 years ago, and it is actually a way to, develop a criteria for buildings, residential, commercial, multifamily, hospitality, to increase the health and well-buildness of the occupants of the building. So instead of about how the, like, LEED was concerned about how the building was constructed and how far the materials were coming from. And this is about, you know, your indoor air quality, your proximity to plants, your water, nourishment, light, mm-hmm. all the different things that you think of in just your personal well-being. So how does the space make the occupants succeed or feel or, you know, thrive basically in each of those. And so that's what WELL is about. And it's mainly for commercial, developed for commercial, because that's kind of where new movements in design start. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's all coming towards residential, and it actually is something that we're already doing on a residential level anyways. With the global health and food movement, we're already thinking more about wellness in our spaces. So this is kind of, you know, adapting those principles and criteria to a residential space. So we're kind of, the event is to kind of talk about both avenues, how it applies to commercial and residential projects.
Okay. And so everybody there in the organization would get continuing education credits
mm-hmm,
for attending and learning. And that's awesome, you know, because we do a lot of that. So at Mosby, we think often, you know, more about safety and that sort of thing is, you know, how safe are you in your home and, you know, doing like blower door test and making sure things are, you know, good, the scientific end. But the wellness end really is pretty cool because it is something that I, you know, kind of overlooked as far as, you know, do you have enough windows? Do you have, you know, things like that that you really need? We haven't thought much on that.
And with something like I already have clients that have, you know, that are very conscious about how much volatile organic compounds or VOCs are being off-gassed into their space just by their furnishings. And, you know, and or people that have very specific allergies and sensitive to lots of different things. So there's already a lot that we're looking at in our materials and how we're constructing this. So this is just kind of taking it the next step further. So
cool. Awesome. So I think we'll get into our final break here. Robert is actually back with us. Robert, if you could hold the line, we'll come back and get your second question when we return. All right, we're back. This is it. Final segment. I'm going to get straight to Robert. He's got another question for us. Thanks for calling back. What do you need?
Yeah, I forgot to ask your guest another question. I got so excited about being on the radio. Anyway, the other question is, I've got a tub in one of my bathrooms I'm remodeling. It's an older color. It's a bisque color. I wanted to know what your guests thought about doing a tub glazing versus a replacement to change the color from bisque to white. Do you believe in glazing?
I do believe in glazing, but usually only if it's like a really, really heavy, like cast iron kind of a thing that's really hard to get out. Otherwise, I think they do tend to chip, in my opinion. So replacement for me would be my number one option.
Okay.
How old's your house?
25 years old.
Okay, so you got a newer tub that would probably be just as easy to replace. Yeah.
Okay. What's the cost difference between a glazing versus a? Because I may just be leaving the house in the next year or so. I'm not going to be staying here for a long time, but I don't want to leave someone with a bad deal either. So, what's the cost delta between a replace and a glaze?
I would say probably about double the cost. I mean, if glazing is, you know, 1,000 give or take, your tub's probably going to be 2, you know, give or take with the plumber and everything that you need ish, something like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, just for that one particular piece of the bathroom. But yeah, I would, you know, what I always warn people about glazing is, it really depends on, you know, use and the value that you're going to get out of it. And if it's a highly, highly used bathroom, if it's the hall bath, you know, centered in 3 bedrooms, then I would probably replace. If it's one that doesn't get used that much, then it's going to last longer and not wear out as fast. And you might consider, you know, reglazing. But honestly, you probably have either a steel or acrylic tub that shouldn't be that bad to change out.
It's totally a guest bathroom. I mean, probably used 4 times a year.
Yeah, then your glazing's gonna last pretty well, you know, situation. So
appreciate it. Yeah, thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks. You're very welcome. Thanks for calling back. Appreciate the call. So now what I would like to kind of touch a little more on this well building, because I find this stuff fascinating too, is, you know, what are some of the other things that are in that well building standard, you know, that you guys kind of focus on?
Well, I'll start with the example of our ASID headquarters, which is actually in Washington, D.C. And it is actually WELL Building Platinum certified, which is the highest level you can get. But some of the interesting things that I saw there, I visited it last year, were the light sensors. And they had light sensors on the exterior that sensed where the sun was, and so it raised and lowered the shades along with the raising and lowering of the sun so that it didn't, you know, nobody got a glare inside. And then there were also light sensors on the inside of the building so that the lights would raise when it was a cloudy day or lower when it was a sunny day. So it kind of kept everything stable, but also the lighting is tuned to our circadian rhythm. So the lighting on the interior matched the lighting on the exterior at all times during the day, and it would just slowly change during the day. And I thought that was just totally fascinating. They have really sophisticated water and air filters. And in fact, they had a screen on the wall so that we could see everything that they were measuring. And that included not only the oxygen level, but the CO2 levels. It tracked, you know, ozone. It tracked any kind of particle you could think of.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it would be on there. And they kept the humidity at a certain level as well. And then their whole big thing is they want you to be active and not sedentary. So there were desktops that would raise and lower depending on whether you wanted to stand or sit. There were different areas that were adapted for different uses. You know, in small groups or working alone. Some people had desks that you could look out the window, but you could choose what you wanted to do each day. You could go anywhere you wanted to. Let's see. They also had something fascinating, which were treadmill desks. So you would actually do your work as you were walking on the treadmill. I thought that was incredible.
That is incredible. That's great. Yeah, for those of us that sit all day.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Which is most of us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also using finishings and furniture that do not off-gas all the harmful chemicals is a huge thing in there. But WELL Building goes into so many more things that, you know, there are about 100 different levels of things that you're looking at, but they get into things like business travel, and you get the option of whether you take a red eye or not, to family leave. They get into all parts of well-being in the building.
So how can, because we have a division that we've started called Build Partner, where we're working with some other architects and designers and you know, being the best builder for their projects, because we design and build. So we're like, why don't we offer this to other people?
Right.
Because it is such a great service and everything. But so how can other architects and homeowners and just, you know, others out there find out more information about this WELL?
You can go to wellcertified.com. Or you can get the Build WELL app, which is on, you know, Google and Android, or you can go to the ASID.org website, and there's information on there for all of it. I found the app especially helpful because it does have all of the criteria on there, so you can at least see what it is and figure out kind of what you wanted to do and what you don't. But it's a great overview.
Awesome. That's good. So they got an app for everything now, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's Apple too. Apple and Google.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. So works on Apple devices too. That's great. So, hey, that was awesome. I wish we had more time. There's so much more that we could definitely go over, you know, with all of this, but, I appreciate you both coming on today. Taking part out of your Saturday to help my listeners out and get some great information out there. And I wanted to, real quick before we go, remind everybody that we have an exterior seminar coming up a couple weeks out, that if you go to our website, callmosby.com, you can register and be a part of that seminar. And I also want to announce, I'm going to draw out of the hat here, that Peggy, you are our big winner of the Stephanina's gift card. So we will call you next week and get that mailed out to you. And for everybody else, it's been great. I will talk to everybody next week. Stay tuned for All Around the Yard with Tony Frisella.
Get more at 971talk.com.